kick off the nine with our Thursday regular. It is Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Kev, you're a golfer. You mention it. Where does the Masters rank in the hierarchy of sport for you?
You know, in the past, it's kind of been a sign to get the clubs out, and I just might have a tee time for 4:10 this afternoon at my one of my local favorite courses, Morgan Creek. But this year, because of the pandemic and everything, frankly, I never stopped. Like, when I golfed the week of Christmas, for crying out loud, because it's the only thing we're allowed to do, and I miss beer league hockey. So normally it's kind of, to me, this is like, when this happens, you're like, okay, this is time to get the clubs out and time to go get ready for the season of golf. But this year is a little bit different. But I, like everyone, will be watching intently. And it's funny because, you know, we talk a lot about whether it's the technical aspects of goaltending, like the biomechanics of goaltending, or the mental side of goaltending and how you're kind of back there by yourself and you're on the same team, but you're almost playing a different sport at times and it can be very lonely. And there are so many similarities in terms of whether it's that biomechanics or the mental game between golf and goaltending, and especially on the mechanics side, the evolution of both and how our understanding of things like equipment and the way the human body can move more efficiently has led to massive gains in both positions. Like, they're both broken down the same way. Like, when I see the telecast and see them frame by framing, you know, sort of the turn and the shoulders and all these things, like, we do the same as goalie coaches. We're digging into that level of detail to look for improvements and efficiencies and inefficiencies that need to be fixed in a very, very similar fashion. And so it's, there are ties there between the two that are, you know, sort of, frankly, if you look at it, they're kind of extraordinary, fascinating to sort of examine. And, of course, the biggest tie between the two is I suck at both in real life.
But you talk eloquently about both, sir. I do like the analogy, and I hadn't really thought about it, but in the moment you mentioned it, I started nodding. You can have all the tools and be the most talented and have the biomechanics figured out and everything, but if you're not in a good spot mentally, it probably really doesn't matter that much. You're not going to succeed in golf or in goaltending. And I do like shining lights on some of the smaller markets in the league that don't get talked about enough and in some of the spots where there isn't a big media following. So please get us up to speed on Jack Campbell, the Leafs, because, boy, apparently he's been playing there, and we just need – I don't know that they're getting enough run for this kid that was a first-rounder – a decade ago and has finally gotten into a groove at the NHL level that I think he probably thought would have come a half decade or even a decade sooner.
Yeah, I know, and I was hoping you were going there with that transition, because it really shows you that, you know, for all the, you know, you're going to hear me talk a lot in this segment. We've already heard me talk a lot about sort of the mechanics and RVH and post play and post integration and proper rotation and recovery, and all those things matter. All those things that you can see between the pipes matter. But that mental state between the ears, as we're seeing with Jack Campbell, is just as important. And I thought James Myrtle had a really good piece this week in The Athletic. So I want to give props there because he was the first to sort of, I'm assuming, get permission and sort of get Jack, and more importantly, some of the other people that were involved in this process, to talk about just how bad things were for him and how it wasn't about his ability to stop the puck. It was about him as a person and mentally and where he was at between the ears more than between the pipes. Now, I knew a lot of those details, but hadn't sort of been given permission to share them before seeing this story. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, it was even darker at times for Jack than I think even that story lets on. And, you know, you credit a guy like Dusty Emu, who is the development goaltending coach with the LA Kings, for, as he identified in that story, when they first brought Jack in and got together with him, it wasn't about going on the ice and stopping pucks. It was about getting to know the person. And what he discovered was a person who had tied his own self-worth so intrinsically to the results of his craft, not to playing goal, not to the joy of playing goal, the joy that he felt playing the position, but to whether he played it well or not, and had sort of sunk to these lows because he had failed to meet the expectations he set for himself as the number 11 pick As a guy who not just was supposed to be the future of Dallas Stars goaltending, but was supposed to be the future of American goaltending. Like, he was being heralded, right? Like, that those were sort of the labels he wore, and he wore them way too heavily. And so it wasn't until you sort of freed up the mind and got back to having fun that any of the other stuff really started to matter. And, you know, these are things, you know, there are some goalie-specific, you know, references in here. Like, in Dallas, he was forced, or I shouldn't say forced, he was encouraged to change his equipment, to change to a brand and a style of pad that really didn't fit his style of play. You know, a very sort of loose fitting, rigid, what we would consider now a blocking style pad. Whereas you see him now, he's wearing this very soft, old school Vaughn pad. It's all about feel and touch and elements in his game that, you know, I would argue maybe at times when he struggled, they tried to coach out of him and have since been put back. And they require confidence. And, like, you could take his pads, like him and Jonathan Quick, you can take their pads and you could like fold them up like an accordion. They're so soft. Yeah. And why am I talking about pads? Well, because that was part of who he was. Feeling the game, playing that style, wearing a pad that allowed him to feel comfortable with. It was one of the first things that changed in L.A. Let's get you back in those old Vaughn pads that you like so much. And that stuff all matters. And this is a very long-winded way of saying, you know, you have to feel good about yourself mentally before any of this stuff can happen on the ice in terms of your performance. And so sometimes I think we can want to change a guy, both style-wise and who he is, to the point where we lose the person maybe too much. And in Jack's case, for sure they lost the person too much. And it wasn't until that they sort of rediscovered that person and allow him to feel good about himself that the goalie came back too.
I guess Campbell's play may have shored up one of the destinations we thought might be looking at goaltending help ahead of Monday's 1 p.m. Mountain, and for your sake, noon Pacific trade deadline. Would you agree that with Hutchinson's performance in the three-hole and Campbell as a two, that the uncertainty surrounding Frederik Andersen, they can look past that and feel good enough about their goaltending to not go out and address that position?
Well, I'm certain that they have more certainty than we do around Frederik Andersen, right? They're just not letting on. And I think your answer depends on that. Because Campbell himself has struggled with an injury this year. And I've said this before. If he's playing like this, clearly, and they play for him, and you see that in the emotions and the way they react to him. But there are a lot of guys on that team, led by Austin Matthews, who are very close to Frederik Andersen as well, and I think will want to have similar performances for Freddie when he gets back. The question is his health, especially when you consider how much time that Campbell's missed this year. You certainly don't want to go into this if you have any serious questions about both guys' ability to make it through the playoffs healthy. I mean, freak accidents happen. But if they're both dealing with nagging things that you know are not going to be better by the end of the season, then you might have a decision to make about your depth. Michael Hutchinson has, you know, as he was for Colorado in the three-hole in the playoffs, he's been fine. His numbers are more than fine. But when I look at his adjusted numbers, they've played really well in front of him. His expected save percentage is really high, and he's performing just a little bit above it. So I don't look at his raw numbers, I think last time I checked it was like in the 930 range, and go, why isn't this guy starting more? He is perfect where he is right now. He will give you good starts and force, and I've said this about him for years, he's a goalie that forces other teams to beat him around the edges, but doesn't necessarily have that next level to take away those edges. But he's not usually going to hurt himself. And so if you defend well, he's a guy that's sort of a middle of the net, solid, steady, perfect in that sort of backup or, you know, in this case, number three hole situation. But if you think you're going to need him to go on a long run as a starter, you know, I'm guessing they're not going to be able to maintain the defensive environment in front of him that they have so far over the long haul. And so you'll see those numbers come down because, you know, relative to expected, they're kind of where they've always been. So if you're the Leafs and you trust both those guys are healthy, you're fine. If you have serious questions about one or both being able to stay healthy, yeah, maybe you do consider a change, especially when you look at what they did last year. You know, they bring in Campbell. If you could find easier said than done, but rather than making an unrestricted guy, if you could bring in somebody on a that you think you can get more out of on a smaller salary with term, because Freddie's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year,
yeah.
You know, in theory, you might be able to solve it for next year too.
I don't know that it's necessarily a fit, but he's played his best hockey there, and I always wonder about that because markets perceive guys differently based on how they play in front of that market's team. Like, if you ask the Vancouver fans about the Senators, they stink. If you ask Calgary Flames fans about the Senators, boy, that's a plucky, hardworking group. Well, guess what happened in the season series? It explains those feelings, right? Edmonton's 8-for-8. Oilers fans would not think of highly as the Senators as Flames fans do. David Riddick's probably played three or four of his best five or six games in the last two calendar years against the Leafs. If they did, maybe it's not even at the deadline this year, but like, would it surprise you if he surfaced there as a free agent this summer and as a guy that could be moved before Monday?
I hadn't actually thought of it. And so I'm not going to talk out of my ass. What I would love to do is I do have the ability through ClearSight to sort of plug goalie A into team X. And
yeah,
take
sure.
a look at how similar those situations are. And so that's what, if you're the Leafs, you're doing right now. Are the chances that David Rittich has so much success against, and we've talked about Big Save Dave being more than a nickname. He's so good against high danger chances, and that's been sort of a staple for him. Are those what the Leafs are giving up a lot? Do they match in terms of the types of high danger chances Toronto centers or surrenders compared to Calgary? Those are the kind of things that you'd want to consider. I don't have the ability to sort of, it's not a quick plug and play in seconds here. It takes a little math. So I can't perform that on the fly, but that's a fascinating one. We certainly have seen teams throughout the years fall in love with guys that played well against them specifically. And Ritter has been great against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So whether it's now or whether it's something in the summer, listen, I know there are teams because they've called and asked for opinions. That see David Rich and still see a lot of talent and upside and are curious what the price tag will be this summer, and I think are maybe hoping that he might become a buy-low option for them. Like, I know he's been up and down there, and there's been criticism. By telling you right now, there are other teams, just as there were before the Flames locked him in, there are other teams that look at this guy and see the skill set, see the ability on those saves, and see a pretty attractive goaltender that they would consider. Whether Toronto's one of them, I can't tell you, but I certainly wouldn't rule them out given how well he's played against them specifically.
Who else is looking for a goalie? Colorado went and got one, but I still think they're looking for one. Am I crazy?
They better be. They better be. And this is with all due respect, as we said, and Johansson's played better there, right? And, you know, like, there was too much of a prospect there that he, like, completely forgot how to stop pucks. But you saw last night Philip Grubauer implodes, and you're going to start to hear questions about are they playing him too much. At the end of the day, Pavel Francouz, who I liked, and we've talked about this, I loved him as a backup option last year. His game during the season looked so good. As a matter of fact, I may have said on another station, when Grubauer got hurt in the playoffs and Francouz went in, I actually was stupid enough to say, I think they've got their number one goalie in net now. And then Pavel Francouz got in the net and looked nothing like the guy in the regular season. So either there was an injury, because he only lasted a few games before he left with injury. So either the injury was there already and that affected his play, or the moment was too much for him. I don't know the answer. I suspect Colorado has a better idea. And yet here we are with less than 20 games left or in that range, and he hasn't played a single game this season. So obviously there's something there in terms of injury. I'd be comfortable with him as my plan B if I knew it was an injury that caused him to look, you know, just nothing like the guy in the regular season last year. But now we're all the way through this season, and we haven't had a chance for him to prove that. And so for sure, with just Johansson and Hunter Miska behind him, I don't see how they can take a team that has Stanley Cup written all over it and go in with basically one goaltender as a proven option, and especially a goaltender like Grubauer, who has had trouble staying healthy and has had playoff hiccups in the past. Like, to me, that is the no-brainer must-upgrade team. I know a lot of people draw a straight line to Jonathan Bernier because he's played there before, and that matters, right? Like, there are factors when you acquire a goaltender as to whether they're going to be, you know, able to make the adjustment. Goalie trades have been down over the – last year was a good year, right? I think we had five sort of real NHL goalies traded, and four of them had a positive impact. Robin Lehner right away. Malcolm Subban is having a positive impact in Chicago this year. Hutchinson, you know, say what you want, had a positive impact when he had to come in Colorado. He got them back from the 3-1 series deficit before they lost Game 7. And clearly Jack Campbell's having a positive impact with the Leafs. That's more positive impacts from trade deadline guys last year than in the previous five trade deadline seasons combined. So it's not easy to find the right fit on a new team. There are a lot of factors, whether a guy's been traded before, whether he's familiar with the system and the coaching staff, whether they play a style that that sort of works to his strengths, you know, much like we talked about Rittich fitting in the Maple Leafs, like similar type of thing. If you go out and just get a goalie because he's a good goalie, but his strength is on end zone chances and you give up rush chances, that's probably not going to be a good fit. So you got to weigh these things at the trade deadline. I think the fact that Bernier is comfortable, knows the goalie coach in Colorado, that matters too, has worked with him extensively. You know, they're not the same team. They don't rely on goaltending now like they did when Bernier was there 3 years ago, but I think that would be a fit. And the other name, I mentioned this last week, we hear Reimer, we hear Dubnyk, we hear Bernier. Like, they're the ones we hear the most often. Why is nobody talking about Linus Ullmark? And if the answer is Buffalo doesn't want to trade him, they hope to re-sign him, then good for Buffalo, because they're 3-0-2 since he came back, and it ain't a coincidence. But yep, this guy has consistently outperformed his environment in Buffalo over the past couple of seasons, has a ton of upside when he's healthy, and that is a question mark, and would absolutely be my first choice off the board. As long as some of those other sort of question marks about fit matched, he'd be the guy I'd pursue.
All right. Anywhere else you want to go before we close for this week? Monday is going to be fun, and as you alluded to, it's been more impactful from netminders. But anything else front and center you wanted to touch?
I'm a little surprised by what happened in Ottawa this week. You know, we now have more in-season goaltending coach firings and changes this season, or the total this season has matched the total all-time before this season. Right? There were two all-time before this year. Ottawa actually has now done it twice. They did it mid-season with Eli Wilson and sort of when he was working with Ray Emery there in Ottawa mid-season. Mm-hmm. And the Edmonton Oilers did it with Freddie Chabot, who's now with the Minnesota Wild. They did it to him mid-season. And this year we've had to wait, and Pierre Grunau in Ottawa. The part that confuses me is when the GM comes out and says, we feel like we need more stability for our goaltenders, as if change and stability go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Matt Murray seems to be the guy getting pointed to. I've read a lot of stories about the changes Matt Murray needs to make, and they need to rescue Matt Murray. And what I don't understand, and there seems to be a lack of knowledge in these stories, Matt Murray was making changes. He started last summer. He had to change how he moved and how he played to have success in the NHL. It had to happen. His old style didn't work. I've talked before about why. Too locked in, too low, too wide, can't move, can't play in today's NHL. He was in this process, the same process that Mike Smith, not quite to the same extent, but with the same off-ice trainer that Mike Smith is having a resurgence under, the same off-ice trainer that allowed Connor Hellebuck to go to his Vezina level, Vezina finalist 3 seasons ago, and continue to grow. It was going to be a year-long process. The goalie coach they let go, Pierre Grew, was on board. He was working with the trainer. They were all working it together. The problem was, it was going to take time. Matt Murray told me when I asked in a post game, because he looked better to me, but the results weren't there. And he looked like he was in between. And I asked him, he said, yeah, I'm thinking out there. You can't think out there, to quote Top Gun, if you think you're dead. And he was thinking. But that should have been part of what they understood was going to happen this year. So to change things up and throw it all away, I really hope that the new guy gets on board with the changes Matt was trying to make, because this concept that I'm reading about having to save Matt Murray, the process was already in place, and you just abandon it, for crying out loud. So yeah, I'm a little worked up on that one. It doesn't make a ton of sense. I do like Zach Burke. I've heard good things about him as a coach, so this isn't anything about him, but I also feel like in some of the things I've heard in terms of DJ Smith as a head coach, he's one of those guys that thinks he knows how goalies should play. He comes from a Babcock disciple era, thinks goalies should be out on top of the crease, and I'm telling you, not everyone can play out there. If they try and do that to Matt Murray, oh boy. And I worry a little bit that we've got tail wagging the dog on this one.
We hit the holy triumvirate of Kevin Woodley cowbells. We got a lot of goaltending. We got some golf in there, and you got a Top Gun reference. Gold star. Good work this week. We'll talk next week.
I will sleep well tonight knowing I hit the triple.
Thank you, sir.
All the best.